Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The Match Ball.
The podcast is brought to you by Levi Solicitors. 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. I'm Dan, hello. Michael's here as well.
Hiya.
So is Moscow, Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
Fuck off. Yeah, it's one of those, isn't it? Congratulations to Brighton for their first ever win in January in the Premier League.
We did it for them, didn't we? Good lads. A great bunch of lads we are, allowing that to happen.
What a fucking grind.
Shit, wasn't it?
Awful.
I'm struggling to think of anything good to say. We'll have to try at some point, but let's be negative first. God, that was awful. Second half, an improvement, maybe. Mm.
Well,
just about.
It went from like a 3 out of 10 to a 4 out of 10, didn't it?
I think it went 2 or 3 out of 10, maybe, at best. That wasn't at all like us. I know we can say the pitch was bad and everything, but...
Same pitch for Brighton, wasn't it?
They did some quite nice stuff on it, didn't they, at points?
Well, what they were doing, they were passing to one another, which we weren't, but we should give that a try because it seemed to be a more successful tactic than booting it around, not at each other.
Who were those players there as well who stood like in the middle of the pitch?
Ben White. All of them. They were just all Ben White.
He annoyed me today, did Ben White, for trying against us, the little prick.
Particularly that one where he turned into Maradona briefly and just ghosted past everyone in midfield.
I mean, it's indicative of a bit of a problem of ours, isn't it, with this with the old man-to-man system, is that particularly through midfield, players can pick the ball up and just have a bit of a run at us.
I mean, running through the middle of us today was not difficult, was it? The midfield was, particularly when it was Rodrigo and Click, in the middle, there was nothing, and then Strike behind them didn't appear to be particularly doing the Calvin job very well. It's easy to forget, I think, with Strike, that he's about a year ago he was coming on and playing badly at centre back as we lost 3-0 to Cardiff, and now he's expected
to. We lost 3-0 to Cardiff.
You know what I mean?
It's exactly what happened. That's exactly how I remember it.
That's how it feels, yeah.
But it wasn't good enough today by any stretch, and Click was terrible as well.
Give us some words of wisdom, Moscow. You're normally optimistic around these sorts of things, but that. Off the back of what happened at Crawley and obviously Spurs before that, it feels like we're in a bit of a rut at the minute.
Yeah, so the good news is we don't play for ages.
I genuinely think that is a bonus now. Yeah, I do think that having the time to go away and work on whatever they need to work on is a good thing.
Under-23s play on Monday, Stoke, and then next Sunday, Wolves. I can't remember if they're home or away, but that's fine. That's all the Leeds United I need to see for the next 10 days. I don't want to see anything... from any of the rest of them. They can all just go and hide with Ilan Meslier. Well, not actually with him, because they might catch what he's got. But yeah, go away.
I mean, talking about keepers, Kiko was actually probably one of the few players who had a good performance today, and we'd been speaking in recent weeks about him being alarming, just seeing his name on the team sheet. I know he had his moment. He had a little moment, but it was only a little moment.
That one at the end where he made it, you went, oh, okay, no, good save, solid. Expect him to make it, but a good solid save. And then it was, for some reason, behind him, which was a little bit concerning. But
I mean, it's...
He didn't do anything majorly wrong, did he? Punched one really, really miles clear. That was good. Caught one in the first half that was all right. Should we keep him in?
No.
Is the right answer.
We put Meslier back in, put Calvin Phillips back in, put... Llorente back in, get Cock fit, find out where the real Rodrigo is, and smack Bamford's early season form back into him and stop him moaning, and then I think we'll be a lot better.
What is going on with Rodrigo? You said at one point during that game, Michael, I can't quite figure out what he's for yet, and there is a certain amount of truth in that. I mean, he has a real quality about him when we've seen him at his best this season. You know, his ability to pick a pass and do it quickly and accurately. But he's having quite a lot of games where I'm not quite sure what he's doing.
He's got very strikerish tendencies, which is not surprising given that's what he is. But he doesn't ever drop deep. Like, you notice when Tyler Roberts came on, he was in our own half a fair bit, picking the ball up and running with it and trying to make things happen. And Rodrigo, he doesn't really seem to do that. So if we've got a lot of the ball in the final third, he's useful to have on. But in games like today where we're just not keeping it in midfield, it is very hard to justify his place in the team because he just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's strange. You keep waiting for him to kind of stop doing that and start playing deeper and start doing what Tyler Roberts was doing when he came on. But then he plays like that all the time. So you start to wonder if that's what Marcelo Bielsa wants him to do, to be much closer to Bamford than we would normally expect somebody in that position to be. But ain't working. And it leaves Click with too much to do. Matthews is a machine, but he can't run an entire midfield on his own.
It was interesting today. I thought he was as bad as anyone in the first half. And then once he got to the stage where he dropped deeper and Roberts was dropping back to help him, he started doing some quite nice things again. And you do wonder if it's just that he is lost in there because he's trying to play against 2, 3, 4 players sometimes. And he's the only one attempting to stop things or create things in that space. And there's just not any possibility that one man can do it.
And in Brighton, you've got a team there that were dropping back into that really, really rigid shape. There was one point in the second half where they lost the ball and immediately dropped into a back seven in a matter of a split second. They went, you could see their five across the back and then two in front of them. And you're like, unless you're going to get through these lines dead quickly and catch them, on the half turn or whatever, then you've got a problem, haven't you, trying to get through all that, particularly on a heavy pitch. Does it feel to you like it was another day where everything just conspired against us a little bit? Subpar performances, heavy pitch, deep lying opposition, it all just kind of knocked us off our stride a bit.
It wasn't a classic deep line opposition kind of game though, because they had the better chances in it, didn't they? And it felt like they were the more likely to score pretty much throughout the game. I felt like they were going to get the second as well at various points when they managed to break. As much as, I mean, I think Potter actually weakened them by making the change. I thought they were actually quite firmly in the game and dominating it until he started faffing about with it, and all of a sudden people like Trossard, who went off, and McAllister, who had been running rings around as a midfield, they seemed to switch that for a more defensive option, and they lost their grip a little bit. Admittedly, we made changes as well, so it's hard to say exactly what led to what, but they were better than us.
Maybe that thing about them being unable to defend the lead is the manager's fault. They can do it, but then he sticks his fucking posh coat in and that starts letting them down. It erodes what they're doing, so that's how come who scored have them down as liabilities when ahead, because they never looked particularly as if they were going to let us score loads of goals against them. And I don't know if it was a game where everything conspired against us, because there weren't really that many things going against us. It was more that things weren't going for us and Leeds had to make those things happen and didn't.
I mean, there was a lot of passing around that was just inaccurate today. Why was that? Does this just happen sometimes?
Pitch.
You think? Can we blame the pitch for that? Same pitch for Brighton.
No, but Michael wasn't saying anything, so I thought I'd provide the idiotic comment that he was too frightened to say. But so it's the pitch's fault.
Well, there is truth in this, that kind of we don't really know how to pick this apart, do we? Does it feel to you like...
With a garden fork.
Well, yeah, with some new drainage. What do we put it down to? I'm struggling a little bit to pin down exactly what it is that's gone wrong today.
I don't know if it's just too many people out of position and it just doesn't quite work. I think Dallas, we've reached the point now where we can say Dallas probably is a fullback, so when he goes there, that was fine. But when you're starting a game with Luke Ayling at centre-back and Alioski, I'm still not convinced by him as a left-back or as a left-winger, to be honest. But I think he's good enough that he can be around to do a bit of squad play. A bit of several jobs. Mm. Then you've got Pascal Stroik, who is a centre-back playing in arguably the most important position in the team. You've got Rodrigo, who's a striker playing in a midfield role. None of it felt like it was slotting together there. I think the loss of Calvin is huge. Like, Stroik, he does some all right things, but the amount of time Calvin is just in the right place to do things, whether it's defensively or attackingly, he just turns up and they're breaking. Like, their goal, you wouldn't have been at all surprised if Calvin's on the pitch that he just at some point steps in front of one of those passes that is going through us, because he just judges things very well.
Yeah, Stroik did take a few pelters, if you were to read Twitter, in that first half, just for his performance, but he wasn't by any stretch the only one.
No, and it's it's a really difficult job that he's being asked to do as well. I wouldn't fancy most players in the Premier League to do it because there's such a lot of responsibility on you.
I mean, Tyler Roberts, at least they offered something when he came on. I mean, the irony is that the two players who most people kind of went, oh, and shrugged when they saw them were Casilla, and then when Roberts came on, great, Roberts is coming on. But he offered us a little bit of something, even if it wasn't quite enough.
I thought he was very good. He was arguably our best player.
See, I always like him. I always think he's a good player, and that was why even there was a late chance, I think the ball, it ended up, it was that one that Bamford, he kind of ducked under the header and it went over him. But his movement before that had been absolutely superb, moving from midfield into the box off the ball, and just looks a lot more comfortable. He manages to sort of channel his striker instincts, which is what he used to do quite a lot when he was on loan at Walsall. They had him as a classic number nine up front. He manages to kind of convert that into being the number 10 you want Rodrigo to be. If you had Rodrigo's obvious quality in kind of Tyler Roberts' body or ability to follow instructions, if those are the instructions he should be following, certainly the instructions Bielsa gives to Roberts, it's interesting trying to work out what the problem is there. If Bielsa is telling Rodrigo to do a totally different thing and then telling Roberts to come on and do that, why don't you try telling Rodrigo to do what Roberts did? And it does sound a bit daft to be telling a Spanish international 29-year-old that we signed for a club record fee to go home and watch some videos of Tyler Roberts play and then learn how to do it, but couldn't fault him when he came on.
Interesting point about Rodrigo, returning to him for a minute, that I was listening to Radio Leeds on the way in, and they were playing back the interview they did with him through the week, and he was saying his favoured position is behind the striker. Now, I don't quite know if we have a player that plays behind the striker, or do we? Or do we, because of his tendency to play further up the pitch, then lose out in midfield because of that, because his instinct is to be further forward?
We saw the way Tyler Roberts did it, and we've seen when Pablo does it, he plays it in the same way as Roberts did, that he drops deep quite a lot to pick the ball up, and he starts things by running with the ball from defence rather than allowing Liam Cooper or someone to do it. He just goes back in there and goes, right, everyone get out of my way, I'm going to have a little go at this. Rodrigo doesn't do that. He seems to want to play off Bamford, and we've not even talked about Bamford yet, have we? But
didn't do out. Well, not his fault.
Didn't work today, did it, really?
He did whinge a bit too much. I know it's like one of the things when very late on, when Tyler Roberts didn't pass to him, he tried crossing beyond him. The ball hadn't even gone out of play, and Pat Bamford turned his back on the match and started chirping at Roberts about where the ball had gone and why he hadn't passed to him. And I was like, concentrate. Come on, lads. And there was a little bit of that.
It was just that sort of niggly frustration, though, wasn't it?
That sort of started early on. I noticed it with Bamford thought he was being penalised for pushing somebody, and he wasn't, but he turned around and started looking at the linesman going, they didn't even do anything. I was like, well, nobody's given a free kick against you, so carry on playing. And he wasn't the only one. There was lots of other kind of bits going off all over the place, but it did seem like Brighton were more focused on the job in hand, whereas Leeds were more easily distracted by things not going their way and more easily falling into that trap of just kind of turning to each other and moaning, or turning to the referee and moaning.
These games where Bamford is anonymous and can't get into it tend to be the ones against the teams that stick two banks of four or a five and a two, as it was with Brighton today, where they really shorten the game and squeeze that space around the box. He just doesn't have the space in which to operate. Do you think that's true? And if that is a problem that we keep coming up against this season, what do we do about it?
Cross better. I mean, it's not his fault that, you know, we weren't finding him with passes. We just couldn't string together a move that would get as far up the pitch as it would actually involve him. There was that one, it was Rodrigo on the first one, wasn't it, when Gianni fired that brilliant cross across. Where else would you cross across?
And it
looked like it might have had a little deflection before it got to Rodrigo. And that was interesting. I wonder what that says about the way things were lining up, because Rodrigo on that one is on the edge of the 6-yard box, hoping he's just going to tap it in, and Bamford had actually dropped back. He'd gone to the edge of the area for the pullback, and you wonder if, you know, should it be the other way round? Would that have gone better? But then when the one chance did fall for Bamford, that I think ended up being called offside for Rafinha way back, he completely air-kicked it. And I suppose the one criticism you'd make of him, if you are going to be not as involved with getting chances in the box. When you do get the chance, you need to kick the actual football and not the air. That would have helped. But it was going to be called offside anyway because of Rafinha. So I don't know, maybe after 10 minutes of the match, we should just have all gone down the tunnel and said, you know what, not going to work today.
It did feel like a game where we could have played for a week and not scored.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Talk to me then about inverted wingers, because we saw Rafinha on the left today and we saw Jackie Harrison on the right, and it felt to me, do you agree, that we lost that best bit of Rafinha, which is his ability to cut inside and unleash a thunder bastard on his left?
He did do that one thing that was good.
What was that?
He was on the...
He took the guy on.
The play completely stopped, and he went, watch this, defender. I'm going to do something now, and you're not going to know where the ball's going. And he did that well. Other than that, it was bad. I thought Harrison wasn't great. He quite often had chances to cross the ball and they were basically all crap, which I thought was not entirely out of character for him, but I thought he'd move beyond this.
Yeah, I wonder if them being on different sides explained why Click kept passing behind them. Rafinha, when he did that skill, it had come about. The game had stopped because he had kind of had to stop his run and go back to get the ball from where it had been passed. I'm sure it was Click. May not have been. Sorry, Matthews, wasn't you? And there was a lot of that, of just kind of, instead of putting it into the path of a player on the run, it was everyone kind of checking back, and then the Brighton players keep running back and getting to position so that when the cross does come in, they're all in position to clear it. So it all just very pedestrian. And Rafinha did his best, and I think Harrison did his best as well. And neither of them kind of stopped trying to do good things, but it was, all the kind of pace was just absent from everything.
And I guess it was another change in a team full of changes, and again, maybe people not knowing their role quite as well as they should. I don't know.
It would be nice to get back to the first team, or as near as damn it, or to see, what Llorente is actually like as a player. We spent a lot of money on him. He could be good, and that means we can get Ayling back to right back. I mean, it did look a little bit brighter at the end, and it wasn't just that Tyler Roberts came on and was the new Maradona. It was that we had Struyck suddenly looked a lot happier as a centre-half, and Ayling and Dallas are the full-backs where they should be. And so it was kind of a little bit more like the Championship Leeds, almost 1-11. In fact, the only player who wasn't a Championship player at the end was Poveda, wasn't it?
He was there in the Championship, though, wasn't he?
So only after Christmas. But it was like...
The finishing 11 had all played in the Championship, yeah.
And Ben White on the pitch too, which is nice.
Yeah. I mean,
how
did we not win when we had 12 players on the pitch? It's a scandal. But we are every game without that balance. And Ayling is so good from right back. It doesn't matter. I know he's kind of turned himself into a later career centre half, but Llorente can do that, we hope.
It does feel like I think you're right on reflection. I do tend to agree with that. It feels like we're suffering from the amount of square pegs and round holes at times. I do tend to agree with that.
We just don't have many central midfielders, do we?
We're just not quite good enough in terms of squad depth, are we? That's the thing.
Our central midfielders include a young centre-back and a winger who kind of sometimes plays there, and Pablo Hernandez, who is, again, a winger stroke attacking midfielder who sometimes has to play in central midfield as well. Like, there's no one you would swap, do a direct change for Click or Phillips, is there?
Well, Shackleton.
Yeah. But
I would like to see more Shackleton. The star of playoff semi-final against Derby after Stuart Dallas, and I think it's kind of he's always a bit of a shame. Not a shame that, you know, Matches Click was so good last season, but it did mean that Shaq, with his injuries as well, didn't get the chance to kind of develop from there. But I would like Shackleton in there, and that's one of our best performances of the season. Started with Pascal Struyck looking terrible and getting booked. Yeah, he didn't look terrible, but he got booked, didn't he, in midfield away to Aston Villa when we didn't have Phillips. And we brought on Shackleton instead, dropped Click deeper. Shackleton did the Click job. Rodrigo and Bamford were attacking. And I think the only change from the team today in that case was it was Helder Costa was playing instead of Rafinha or Pervada. And we had Robin Koch in defence.
I forget we own him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a way off yet.
And that's another thing. It's a shame that his knee couldn't get through to the end of the season for us. So that's and that's had a knock on where Ayling's had to move to play for him because Llorente's out at the same time and all of that. But yeah, I often think Shackleton is worth a go. But again, and I feel like I say this quite often, it is because we have the perennial problem of us being shallow in midfield. Cuisance was being signed for a lot of money for a reason.
Yeah, I agree with both of you on that about midfield. And it's ironically where you need Forshaw, isn't it? Someone in there, the metronome, someone to get in there and just pass it about and bridge that gap between the players who are so far up the pitch and those that are sitting deeper.
Just someone who knows that job really well. Because as much as Dallas comes in and does it admirably most of the time, and Struyck has occasionally played fairly well there, they just don't know it in the same way as someone who's played 200 games throughout their career does.
And you're absolutely right. And just touching on Struyck, with that in mind, I think it's admirable that Bielsa sees qualities in Struyck where he could come in as an able substitute for Calvin and sit in the deep line midfield role. But we've seen the number of times where he's had kind of off games in that position, and then he has one good one and maybe a couple of off ones when he does it, because it's not his specialist position. He's used to being a centre-back. And when you are operating on such fine margins as we do in the Premier League, when games are tight like that, and it just needs that little bit of extra something, when you have a player who is learning a position like that, you can't really afford that luxury, can you? Particularly when you've got other players missing.
And Calvin Phillips was really good at it, so you properly notice the difference. Whereas because we don't have an out-and-out brilliant left-back, when that changes between Dallas or Alioski, and last season when it was Douglas sometimes, it didn't massively affect the balance of the team because it was always sort of all right there. Whereas with Phillips going out, there's no one who can do anything like the job he does.
And Phillips said that he didn't really get the hang of it until the end of his first season. So there is still hope for Struyck, and I think that's the problem we find ourselves in a little bit, where he has the chance to kind of come in and learn how to do it while Phillips is out. And the assumption is that because we're not going to go down, it doesn't matter, it'll be fine. Struyck can kind of has that. We do have the luxury this season of him seeing if he can get closer to the Phillips level, but we don't really have the luxury of losing to Brighton. That's what kind of makes it a little bit more tense about trying those things, because it's all right, Spurs or whatever, it's like, it's fine. Even Calvin Phillips is trying to get to another level in those games, but we can only afford those kind of luxuries if we beat Brighton.
Are you at all worried about relegation now?
Oh, we're doomed. We're down basically already after today. That's it now.
Always a bit worried. We should be fine. But yeah, I'm glad we've not got a game for a while. We can have a long, hard look at ourselves and decide a team that might actually play some proper Leeds United football, because that was not like watching one of our games today, was it? It felt like when I accidentally end up watching, you know, West Brom against Brighton. And then you just sort of get 20 minutes in and you think, shit,
I think that's
what's, look at my phone.
That's what's frustrating with us when we have these defeats in the Premier League, is that in the case of like Palace, not a good side, but have some good players. Brighton today, not a good side at all. And you can see perhaps why they've struggled, what you were saying there, Moscow, about taking off, you know, their attacking players who are doing good things and sitting deeper and deeper and deeper and trying to hang on and not quite managing it. And just, it's just really frustrating because we know how good we can be when things start to pop. But every one of these defeats is a little reality check, isn't it? And a reminder that we need to really dig in and get some wins on the board, keep winning.
We do tend to be a little bit off it over Christmas and January. Both Bielsa's seasons so far have had that about them. So if you remember this time last year, I don't know if any of us were particularly optimistic about promotion because we were at Forest. It looked, and it's reminiscent performance-wise of kind of games like Forest last season and Wigan that was around this time last year, where there's just something about the cold that Leeds don't seem to like. And I think that's maybe where the pitch does come into play. If Karen Carney wants a tip next time she's covering a Leeds game, don't say that it was COVID that got us up. Say that COVID's contribution was that we got to play most of our games in June and July and less in March, and the pitch had a rest and it was like a carpet for the closing stages, whereas it is... I don't know how much of a factor it is, because you do have to say both teams are playing on it, and you know they are Premier League footballers. You should be able to kick a ball to each other over whatever surface. But then you do see the kind of the when you get a close up view of the ruts that they are dealing with on a regular basis.
The pitch should be addressed, actually, shouldn't it? Because Angus has mentioned stuff in the program notes today, saying that you know it takes 14 weeks to relay a pitch, and we just didn't have the window this time. It wasn't in the plan to do it. And there's undersoil technology that's 25 years old.
And there's nothing they can do about it. That's the thing, apart from get rid of the whole thing and put a new one in. So he said in his program notes as well today that the ground staff should be getting ground staff of the year awards for even putting matches on it. That the fact that it's actually playable, given the state it's in, is a great testament to the work that they're doing to keep it even at the level it's at. So the only thing they can do about it is rip it up, start again. But until Edwin Collins takes over as our groundsman, then we're stuck with what we've got. But pass to each other, you know, it shouldn't be that difficult. But maybe because we do pass a lot more than the other teams that come to Elland Road and play against us. I think at one point we had almost twice as many as Brighton. I'm sure the gap only widened as we chased the game. It probably does have more of an impact on us, and maybe we should have a look at the pass completion home versus away and see if there's actually anything in it, or if it is just a bollocks excuse.
We don't have any games on that pitch for another 2 weeks now. We've got Newcastle away after, 10 days from now, after a bit of a rest, and then Leicester away.
I think next time we're playing it as well, cut it.
You think?
Looked long today, which I'm sure they did for a reason, in fairness. But
we'll pass on your comments to the club, Michael.
Could they maybe just like put a really tight tarpaulin over it that looks like grass? So it is, so that they make it flat.
Carpet it.
Yes.
AstroSurf is sometimes.
If they don't have time to replace the actual pitch, just put a better pitch on top of it. But just, you know, get some turf from B&Q and roll that out, AstroTurf. Not tell anybody, just cheat.
They've got 17 days in which to do it. I was looking at the calendar for one.
Plenty of time. But,
I'm just looking at last year's calendar, actually. This is kind of the equivalent of losing to Sheffield Wednesday at home, after which we were not particularly worried because we were like, well, bit of an off day. It's all right, though. We can bounce back. And then we lost to QPR and we were like, okay.
But
it'll be all right. Then there were the Wigan and Forest defeats in there as well.
There is a real point then that we play Newcastle next and they're terrible. So if there's a side that you'd want to face in this division, they're probably one of the ones you'd pick. I mean, you know, that could obviously backfire and we might lose there, but we beat them. We absolutely thrashed them not so long ago. So we know we've got the beating of them if we're on our game.
Everyone says they're terrible. Their own fans say they're terrible. They can't believe that they have the points they have this season because they basically say that they don't deserve them. So let's beat Newcastle and everything will be fine.
And it will, yeah.
And to give our wretched team some credit, you know, they have got us into the position so far this season that, you know, we're not as desperate for points as Brighton. We can afford to lose to a team that's around us at the bottom and still have, they were talking on the commentary, we had, you know, oh, it's going to be a 6-point gap. It's miles, you know, it's still a long way ahead of them.
It's a three-match turnaround, isn't it?
Yeah, I was only joking about us being definitely doomed to relegation. We will stay up this season and it will be fine. It's just maybe it's going to be closer than we feared, or maybe we beat Newcastle, whenever the Southampton rearranged one is, get something away at Leicester, get a point there. You know, we've got plenty of time to pick all these.
And it's a six point gap to Brighton, who are 16th, which is also fine.
Yeah.
If we finish the season in 16th, all right.
I'd rather not, but yeah.
Like, I'm not bothered. That's absolutely fine for a first season back. I wouldn't be what we were maybe expecting at certain points in the season, but it wouldn't be a disaster, would it?
Let's wrap it up with heroes and villains, by the way, because we've hit time now. So, villains, Mopay, the pitch.
Mopay, the pitch. I mean, if they had a few players going down very easily, and also Kevin Friend for giving them free kicks for some things.
Yeah, for buying their shit.
Yeah, that yellow card to Luke Ayling for nothing was a disgusting outrage. There was the entire result needs to be investigated and overturned.
There was a free kick given against Strike as well, I think against Trossard out on the touchline as well in the first half, where again, like the Ayling one, didn't actually touch him.
They're giving these based on reactions now, aren't they?
Yeah. So that was shit, but it made no difference, did it, let's be honest.
Mind you, we got the first Ayling flop within 2.5 minutes, didn't we? So
we did.
A lot to be desired from the refereeing. Any heroes, anybody come out of that one with honour today?
Tyler Roberts.
Yeah, I was going to say Roberts.
He gets a lot of shit, and he's better than people think, but he doesn't often show it, so it's nice to see it.
And presumably he played that well having had COVID as well. We don't actually know, do we? But given the weird absence of no one commenting and then him being back in the team.
Yeah, and Bielsa said he was over his illness, didn't he? So it could have just, you never know, maybe he had COVID-like symptoms and it turned out to be the flu and he was fine or whatever, but he obviously had reasons for not playing, but he looked very well and he played very well. And let's hope Melier comes back and performs just as well.
I thought Cooper was fairly good as well. Was he at fault for the goal? I can't remember it well enough.
Yeah, Cooper was fine. He played well.
I thought he did all right.
Right then, is it?
You, can't, you couldn't fault their effort. The
great bunch of lads.
Great bunch of lads.
I feel like we've often said that after 1-0 defeats to Brighton. Well, I mean, if you remember the players that fucking Warnock used to say were a great bunch of lads, were a right shower of bastards. So
true.
He can take his good lad status home with him tonight and along with the rest of them.
Just wrapping it up on this thought is that I hate it when we hit these games where we have a little bit of a dip in form and we welcome the chance to have no football for a few days, because I really like watching Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds United. It's a pleasure most of the time. Today wasn't, and I am happy for the break, but we know that when the Newcastle game comes around, we'll be chomping at the bit for it again.
It's a tough adjustment as well, because we've taken the step up that we don't win as many games. Like we basically had 2 years of mainly winning, didn't we, with Bielsa in the Championship.
And there aren't going to be results that go against what you might term form. Like, we've basically beaten everybody beneath us so far and generally lost to teams above us. But there are going to be some fixtures in that will buck the trend. So we will lose to Brighton, who are beneath us. We will beat Man City and Liverpool like we did earlier on in the season.
Yeah, I mean, 6 points, it would be a total of 12 points by the end of the season from those games will be very welcome. And that's 12 points that Brighton aren't going to get.
Right, fingers crossed for
12 imaginary points that Brighton aren't going to get.
Fingers crossed for a more optimistic match ball against Newcastle. We will return with all the usual stuff before that. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in a bit.
The Match Ball.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.